Welcome back. It's Tom Bell here, and so grateful to have you here for another episode. I know this one's been a long time in the making, so I'm sure that you're looking forward to it as much as I am. And on today's show, we welcome Hein Hunnicum all the way from Cape Town in the Western Cape of South Africa. And I am super excited to have you on the show, Hein. So welcome.
No, thank you, Tom. And good morning or good afternoon, depending on where you are when you're listening to this. It's now in the morning in Cape Town.
So, hi.
I'm from Cape Town.
Yeah, so would you mind telling us a bit about yourself?
Yes, no good. So I'm from Cape Town in the Western Cape, as Tom mentioned. I'm born and bred here. I was born in Hermanus, of all places. For those of you that want to Google, it's quite known for its whale season. Mm. Then I went to Stellenbosch University in Stellenbosch. Did a business degree there in financial management and marketing. And then I ended up in retail for quite a while. One of our large retail groups here is called TFG, the Fushini Group. And then I was there for 8 years. And I think if I have to reflect back, one of my biggest privileges was there to have an awesome mentor back in 2002 by the name of Howard Godfrey. He founded At Home, which is a homeware store, similar to Pottery Barn in the US. And there I learned many things, and some of the questions that Tom might ask me today, I think I'm definitely going to refer back to my time spent with Howard at TFG.
So how did that come to be? Is that something that did you seek out the mentorship, or did you find yourself in a place where, you know, that person sort of just, you know, positioned themselves to mentor and then you just sort of took advantage of it?
I just took just the latter. I just realized at that stage I was still very young. I was 26 years old when I joined At Home. It was an internal promotion at the Fushini Group. And you actually, when you under mentorship, you don't realize that you are under mentorship. But actually, once I stepped away there after 4 years in that one role, working closely with Howard, I actually realized, and to this day, how much I actually have learned from him.
So intriguing. And is it something that you have then utilized that sort of mentoring relationship since then? Have you sought out new mentors, or are you a mentor as well?
I hope none of my new employees are listening, but I haven't met a Howard quality again. Mm. But I think every person that you work with or report to gives you a new sense of questioning, that you question some things that you have done in the past in a certain way. You said just before we did this interview, Tom, that you're from Brisbane. Mm-hmm. And actually two other people that I worked with in Sydney and Melbourne, I would say would be two recent mentors as well. The one is Danielle Gresham. Danielle has been awesome. She worked with me at Stellar. Yes, it's just amazing how some people just have that warmth about wanting to share knowledge.
Mm. And it feels to me like, in a way, and I can attest to the same sort of thing, like when I first came across mentors, I then started seeking them out, and you know, different ones fit. You take little bits. Some people are with you for a moment, a season, and a lifetime. And, you know, it's one of those things where I've kind of, I don't know if Frankenstein is the right answer, but, cobbled together, piece, it's grown and grown and grown. It looks like an artwork, I suppose, of all the different pieces that I've stolen from all the different places or learned that yes. Helped me to navigate life today. And I'm so thankful for every little piece of the puzzle.
No, correct. So it's definitely fitting all those little bits of specialness of all the people together. And then actually that gives us the recipe to being the perfect employee.
Mm. And so speaking of, putting things together to do, great things, in terms of this, you know, podcast that for this season, I really wanted to try to like hone in on success and, you know, meeting successful people like yourself. You know, you've got a long hit of, you know, successes, and the more that you speak to people, everybody seems to be very humble. Like, you know, there's always someone that's more successful, or I could have done better, or all of those sorts of things. And, but ultimately, you know, yeah, you clearly have enjoyed success in life and in career. So I guess I would be intrigued to know, like, what is your definition of success?
I think the key word there is definition, because if you don't define for yourself what success is, you are never going to feel a sense of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
So for some people, success is driving a Bentley. Some other people, it might be owning 10 properties, or building an empire with 10,000 people working for your company. And I think for me, my definition of success have changed over the past 25 years. So I'm going to go with my most recent definition. And that is where I feel successful when I can make a positive impact on people's lives, either being clients or being employees that work in many of my departments. And in doing so, of course, a bit of selfishness, I need to enjoy it as well.
Mm.
So it needs to be a win-win situation whereby you're leaving a positive mark, but in doing so, you didn't use anybody, but you actually enjoyed yourself as well in the process.
Yeah,
that's just really success at the moment.
Oh, I really like that. Almost like as you're saying that, I'm almost imagining, like, you know, through that level of success, it's almost like being in a solar powered car. You want to get to where you're going, and for you, it just happens to be a solar powered bus. You want to basically, your thing involves doing a lot and serving other people, but the sun hitting your roof has to be that enjoyment and that fulfillment that you actually get from the activities that you're doing as well. Otherwise, no Correct. Sun, no movement. You just got a whole bus full of people stranded. So Correct. That's cool. I like it. So if you had to think about how that's changed over the years, you know, is it something that has changed often? Is it something that's sort of like, you know, at each new chapter of your life, there's been a new thing where it's become more about other people? Or can you think back and it's like, no, I remember it was more like about myself, and then I had this awakening and I became about doing a lot for others?
I would say it ties in with decades of my life. I'm in my 40s at the moment, so I'm able to identify three key blocks of definitions. The definition in my 20s, definition in my 30s, and definition in my 40s.
Right.
So I would say it's changed twice.
And it comes back to that definition again. So you do feel like you are checking in with yourself about, like, what success means to you. I mean, you know, what it is, what you're aiming for, what you're going for. Is that something that you're doing on a regular basis? Is it an alarm on your phone? Is it just once a year you check in? What's that look like for you?
No, I think, Africa is unfortunately a place with not a very good public transport infrastructure. So we all sit in severe traffic. I mean, I spend on day about between 2.5 to 3 hours commute to work and back.
Wow.
And that's almost like your own meditation time, where in the mornings I plan my day. You crawl at about 10 kilometers an hour, so there's lots of time to think. And then in the afternoons, I sit back and I think about, normally on a Friday or a Thursday, what was good for this week? And it just reminds you to, not to give yourself a compliment, but rather just to appreciate what changes have been brought along or implemented because of you. Mm. Otherwise, you're going to end up very tired at the end of the week and not feel any sense of accomplishment, which I've mentioned before. For me, it's very much to be able to identify, I've set myself out to do A, B, and C, and I achieved A, B, and C. And then you can relax. Because if you don't tell yourself you've completed A, B, and C, you're going to always feel that there's still things to do and you can never switch off.
Wow, like a feedback loop. That's really interesting because it is kind of almost like a treadmill sometimes. Like the goals just keep coming, and
I was on that treadmill in my 30s.
And so that has been the 40s a key ingredient of the success.
Yeah,
I
think especially towards 45, those things start to change then. And I think, of course, many people said with COVID, that beautiful word that has been used multiple times and overused, unprecedented. So during those unprecedented 2 years with hard lockdown in South Africa, especially a year of the 2 years, it forces you to take stock as to what's life about.
That's so interesting that there are a lot of conversations that I'm hearing that sort of swish across social media or even just around the water cooler at different places about how there's been a big shift mentally about what is important now. Like what is success? What are the things that mean so much? And perhaps we were all on that treadmill before and people are sort of darting off in all different directions now. I don't know if it's everywhere, but certainly here we're talking about the great resignation of people leaving a lot of jobs. Yes, right. So that's interesting, like a potentially a global thing where people are sort of trying to work out what success actually means to them. Instead of being, it's almost not even like a treadmill. It's more like one of those big, long airport travelators where you just hop on one end and this is where you're supposed to go. But people are sort of jumping the rail now and going, well, I can walk in any direction. What tickles my fancy? I don't have to go to the end of this travelator.
I think there's that whole thing of tolerance threshold where people previously were willing to tolerate waking up at 4 a.m. in the morning, sitting 2 hours in traffic, going to work, working till 6, sitting in traffic again for 90 minutes, coming home. And then with lockdown, all of a sudden realizing what that extra 3.5 hours means to them, either being just at home or spending more time with their families.
Yeah, because it's...
I think that's one of the key, I'm guessing now, but I would suspect that would be one of the key reasons for the great resignation at the moment.
Yeah,
people aren't willing to sacrifice all that personal time.
There's so much of it too, because it's not even just the time being in the car in the traffic. You got to get ready and get into the uniform. Now it's like a lot of places are sort of calming down, and I can be sitting in a Teams meeting wearing my black shirt, and it doesn't change my work output. Like, sure, if I'm talking to a customer, I'll put on the uniform, but ultimately, like, why not wear this shirt? It's not going to change my performance. I'm wearing shorts. Who cares if my knee is freed? Free the knee, I say.
100% spot on.
Especially hot here too. But are there any other ingredients that you think have made up your success?
Working hard. It's a cliche, but there's really no substitute for working hard. Not necessarily hours, but just making the effort. It's not going to be like a drive-through McDonald's where you just say, burger order, please. Here's your burger. There you go. You need to work for what you want. So you need to be quite clear as to what you want and what you're willing to sacrifice for that. That takes me to my second point, which would be risk appetite. Big risk, big reward. But it doesn't mean to say that you're a bad person if you don't have a risk appetite. But then act within those parameters and you can still be successful. But don't fluctuate between taking big risks in 2021 to taking no risks in 2022 and then big risks again in 2023. You're just going to confuse yourself and you won't necessarily see the benefits or the yield that those risks that you've taken have given you.
So would you say it's a bit like aiming for the shooting for the moon, land among the stars? And is that like something that you've kind of done? Like you want to think big, aim big, work big so that you've actually got the, because it's almost like that rocket ship, right? Like if you're not going to work hard, well, it's like, quarter filling the rocket. Well, the rocket's not going to make it to the moon. It's probably not going to make it out of the airfield or whatever they call it, the rocket field. I don't know what that's called. So you're coupling hard work with aiming high. And so that even if you fall short, you're not going to be disappointed with where you land. Is that kind of what you're talking about with your risk appetite?
Yes, but also in the sense of that you need to decide for yourself, are you willing to take the risk with this new concept that you have at work, because it can either go big or it can backfire. That is the one thing. And then the other one is also when you decide that, are you going to be together with risk appetite? Are you a 20-year, 10-year kind of person at a company, or do you prefer moving ship every 3 years? When you receive 2 or 3 job offers, do you go for the startup or do you go for the stable mothership that's been in existence for 200 years, where the policies and procedures are there just to be followed? And I mean, there's a place for everyone, depending on your personality and your risk appetite. But just be certain, then, going back to my opening statement, where do you want to slot in? If you're keen for a big risk, don't go to a very stable environment, because you're going to become bored. And the inverse is applicable as well, because then you're going to feel constantly anxious. And it all depends on where you are in life as to what your appetite is at that stage. But be honest with yourself.
You sound incredibly self-aware. Like, you know, I know that, like, obviously lockdown, you said, has provided time there, but is that something that you've cultivated over time? Is it through, like, mistakes? Like, I speak to a lot of people, and a lot of people don't know. They don't know what they want. Like, if you ask them, they might know what they would love to do if they could do anything, but not a lot of people sort of sit and quieten down to have that level of self-awareness of what they truly want, not what they should want, if that makes sense. How did you come to get that level of self-awareness?
I got a very nice promotion back in 2014. It was to exec director level at a large life insurance company. And it was the first time that I sat on an exco. I was at that stage 38. And I think by pure luck, I decided for myself that I need to do some self-development. So I looked on LinkedIn and I searched for life coach. I actually came across a life coach that actually worked with me 10 years ago. She has subsequently left the corporate life, and she has her own facilities and practice. And Anne Buckus, she actually lives here in Durbanville as well, where I stay.
Wow.
And we had amazing sessions where I could really... she asked interesting questions. I think it was about 8 or 9 consultations. And that really sparked many of the things I, to this day, still ask myself, which helped a lot.
Wow. So that was interesting. Like, you knew you needed some assistance. Most people were probably just, like, for the best part, just muddling through and getting back into autopilot and just probably just doing as best they can, not actually going about doing that. So you saw the need. You've gone and found somebody, small world in the end, for who was to help.
Yes.
And it sounds interesting that then you've carried forward a lot of those things. Would you share any of the sort of questions that, like, is there anything that sort of comes to mind that you're like, well, I can sort of remember 1 or 2 things that, you know, somebody else listening to this might be able to ask themselves?
And something that you mentioned as well is one tends to sell yourself short on past accomplishments. You tend to only remember failures of the past. You sometimes almost need to do a job interview with yourself, where you need to brag a bit in your brain, especially if you are very perfectionistic and critical about yourself.
Yeah.
Two things I'm a bit bad at. So it just gives you context and some perspective about that you've done a lot, and then what you can learn from that going forward. And then on one question that you always ask me is that, should you fail, how would it make you feel? And should you succeed, how will it make you feel? Because behind every challenge or new opportunity, there's an emotional component as to how you are going to feel when it goes either A or B. And you need to manage those two emotions.
Is the idea the one that's positive, you manage it from the perspective that it breathes fuel into what you're doing, and the one that's negative is the one that's potentially like undermining what it is. So you maybe need to look at that and try to lessen that or think about, well, how bad is that fear? Because sometimes people are like, oh, I'm so scared. And it's like, what would happen? Well, I could lose my job. Then what would happen? I'd have to get another one. Then what would happen? Well, I'd be there, you know, or it's embarrassment or something. But how bad is that? I mean, like you're thinking worst case, but does it happen?
And then once you've managed that fear, especially for option B, when it shouldn't succeed, then you actually, if you have managed that fear, you can actually apply more energy to making it a success. And when you do that, things just tend to fall into place.
Oh, I like that. Because otherwise, if you'd have just let it be that there was fear behind it, that might have been enough to not even get started. So now you're past the point of starting. So at least there's some momentum. So you're already past the point where the fear was gripping you, you're paralyzed, but now you're moving. And if you keep putting more energy and effort into it, well, then you really should be able to get the ball rolling and create like the momentum you need to succeed.
Correct.
I like it. And so, you know, are there any other ingredients that you, so we're talking about hard work, that do you feel like that's pretty well-rounded, for how
there's
you
one about, more.
Oh yeah. What's the other one?
There's one more. And that is the never underestimate the power of a strong network. I sound like a real LinkedIn PR person here, but, no, it's so important that people know about you, that people know about you for the right reasons, and that you can rely on certain people and do favors for people, because they will do favors for you again. Mm. It just makes things so much easier. I'm not saying invite 10,000 people on LinkedIn. Prior to my post that made you invite me, I had only had like 800 connections on LinkedIn, which is mm-hmm. very low compared to some other people that have got like 10,000 followers and stuff.
Yeah.
But that 800 is like handpicked. And I actually go through it often where I haven't thought of connected with you for the past 5 years, delete. So
it's like a well-tended garden.
Yeah. So you've got a specialized focus on who's your circle of network. It also makes people feel a bit more special if they know that they're part of a smaller group.
Well, if 800 is your tended garden, that's still a pretty impressive network.
Well, I'm not 10 years old, so I've been on LinkedIn for many years. So due to all the jobs as well, I mean, ex-colleagues and stuff.
But I suppose you do see the value in the actual networking side of things, because it can be something that grips people with fear, the idea of reaching out, or because it could be, I mean, like just like you've looked for that life coach, that's someone that's probably within the network that you've known, whether it's on the LinkedIn or not. But
yes.
And so that goes to show how somebody within your network was able to provide the assistance that you needed, and you were actually able to then provide them what they needed in terms of a happy client, someone that wanted to go through and be coached. So is that something that you've just sort of seen over time, or did someone teach you that networking was key, or, you know, over time you've just sort of seen the benefits of it and have then made the effort to connect and stay connected?
I think it was after my second career move, I've realized when you are at the new company and they might ask you a question, you might not have the answer, but you know of a specialist in the past.
Mm.
And that's where I realized it's good. And then it's also nice to introduce those people again to your business, where they can perhaps either do contracting work or whatever. So it's a win-win situation, because you bring the right skill to the right gap.
So that's interesting too. Like, it does sound like a central theme for who you are. Like, you talk about success being like how you can help other people but enjoy it along the way. And you are, even from a networking perspective, it's sometimes networking could be seen as get rather than give, and whilst you're able to get an answer, you're looking to try to give, and how can I help these other people? So it sounds to me like it's constantly on your mind as to how you can be providing value to others.
I would say it needs to be at least 50-50. It can't be all about just receiving the advantage. You need to give something back as well. not to sound all weird, but I believe in karma. If you give good out, it'll come back in twofold. If you give bad out, it'll come back in threefold.
Okay.
It's good to give some. And I mean, I've been privileged quite a lot. With lockdown, a previous company that I worked for, it had to close down, the Australian company that was based in South Africa. Within a week, I landed 2 job offers. I think that's part of the positive karma.
So that's an interesting one. So you know, you've obviously talked about shooting for the moon, or like, you know, your risk appetite and aiming high. You've talked about changing roles. That's the devastating kind of thing for to a business to just shut, and then so it's no longer there for you. What is it that you're sort of doing in your, you know, talking in your mind or saying to yourself or running through it during those harder times to sort of help propel you through that towards your next success, or keep the bus moving?
I think becoming a father changes everything. Can you still hear me? Sorry, I just got an internet connection issue.
Yes, okay. Same here. I can hear you now.
Okay, sorry. I think becoming a father changes a bit some perspective. So just thinking of my daughter just makes everything feel better. Then the other one is, when you're going through a tough time, you tend to make it all about yourself. When you're trying to resolve the situation that's making you feeling so bad. But when you actually realize that you are, it also depends on where you are in your career. I mean, in the past 5 years, I've been at GM level. So when you're a general manager, I mean, the entire organization, if there was a downturn, hundreds of people will be impacted. And when you realize that you need to make this work, not just for yourself, but because of 500 people that supports 500 households, on an average household size of 4.2, it gives some perspective. It adds to the stress, but it also gives you the bigger picture where you need to realize this just needs to work. And when you realize that it just needs to work, then you come up with ideas. Once again, the buzzword bigger picture. Someone many years ago said to me, and I always refer back to this saying that bad times also have expiry dates. You might think it's shockingly bad at the moment, but this too shall pass. Otherwise, once again, about applying your energy, you just think, why bother? But if you know it's only short-lived, although at the beginning of COVID, I thought it will never end. Because I didn't enjoy just sitting home all the time.
Yeah.
But it's good to know that it's just part of the island that you're on at the moment.
It's interesting. Like, I ride motorbikes, and there is a thing called target fixation where, you know, if I'm riding and all of a sudden a kangaroo might jump on the road or something and be stuck in the headlight, whatever it might be. If you stare at the kangaroo or whatever the animal is, you're likely to hit the animal. Whereas if you look at the spot right beside the animal, like hopefully it doesn't jump further in the way, you should be able to navigate around because the bike is going to ride where you focus. And so when you're talking about the not focusing on the negatives and seeing, oh no, the company's closed down, I'm never going to be able to do anything ever again, it's never going to work out. It's more like, or even when you're saying about, I've got these, you know, 1,000 people that are reliant on me, you know, and the pressure of that, well, there's no point focusing on the pressure of it. It's change your focus over here to where you need to win. And it sounds like by doing that, directing your energy in that way, you then find solutions and achieve success.
100%. I couldn't agree more.
And do you feel like I've been thinking of late how I might articulate just and pop some of these things on social media as I've journeyed through my life. Like, I've made so many mistakes, so many failures. And, you know, at the time, they always feel like, damn it, like, why can't I make this thing work? Or how did that thing not work? But then you look back and now, again, I've in that Frankenstein work of art, or that is me, I suppose, rolling through life, I've taken so many learnings from the past. Is that something that you also do? Do you look back on failure? And And maybe it's not failure, it's failure. Maybe like they're good things to happen because it's either win or learn, not win or fail.
No, definitely. I mean, I always tell the staff that work with me that it's perfect to make a mistake, but make a mistake once, because that's how you learn. And many of the good things that I'm applying today in business is self-taught after I've made a mistake by going the opposite direction previously.
Mm, I like it. And if you think back, like you mentioned, you know, there was one time when you got bumped to that sort of exco level gig. I don't know if this will be the one for you, but is there a moment in your life, if you like think back, where you can remember like making a big breakthrough and sort of like that was something that you then will be willing to share, but a breakthrough moment in your life where you feel like you became extra successful?
Yes, it's it was actually, you'll appreciate this, it was this Australian-based story.
Nice.
A company by the name of Stellar, it's now known as Probe CX, launched, they diversified their international footprint. So they were previously only on 4 continents, and then they added Africa. And I was selected out of quite a few applicants to be the general manager to launch that business for them in Africa. And then arriving in Sydney, Eastern Sydney, and then Queensland, Gold Coast, and Brisbane as well. And just the way how the people were so excited about South Africa and Africa, whatever, and me knowing that I'm leading this new venture, I think that was probably one of the most self-gloating periods of my life, where I really realized this feels amazing.
Yeah.
Because together with that, it entailed multiple new job opportunities as well.
Mm. Well, it's just pretty incredible. Like it feels like you ooze courage, because you had to throw your hat in the ring. Like, people can think about doing that. It's going to a whole new place. Well, it's been successful here. That doesn't mean that it will be successful there. It doesn't mean that it won't be incredibly hard work and may or may not work out. That okay. could people like, oh, you know, career suicide and all, you know, the fear. So that risk appetite thing really comes into it. But it sounds to me that the bigger the risk appetite, in from how I'm looking in, seems like the bigger the level of courage to back yourself.
Yes. Mm. Definitely. But it comes down to calculated risk, where you don't just calculate it in your mind, but you actually write down the pros and cons of making this move. But yes, I mean, if I have to reflect back on the time spent with Stellar, I mean, as I've mentioned, together with Howard Godfrey, Danielle Graham, that I worked with, they are two standout colleagues that I will cherish for the rest of my life.
Wow, that's saying something, isn't it? I mean, isn't it funny how these people touch our lives? You know, we are just bouncing through all these different places. Who knows where we will be? And yet some, like if it's 400 trillion to one, they say that is the likelihood of us being born. What's the likelihood of you having navigated your career path in all the different directions in life and countries, courage to do this, that, and everything else, and then meet these people along the way too, as well as yes. their likelihood. So, you know, I just find that some mathematician could, but I couldn't even fathom the number, what the odds would be of you actually having those people come into your life and have that impact. So it is nice that happens.
Especially if you think, as I say, we live in a global village. We are hundreds of miles apart, different time zones. And because of a company, I still have regular interactions with many of the people I met in Sydney and Gold Coast. We complement each other. We still have WhatsApp chats and stuff, and it's so nice.
That's cool. And is there anything that you like looking back on, you know, your life? And I suppose you're, you know, you feel like you said you're not 10 in your 40s, and it like, you know, when I was 10, 40 would have been so old, and I'm just not far off 40 now. But you know, then you start to realize that, you know, we've still got a long life left. Hopefully, we've got a quite a long life left. But is there anything in your time that you look back on and that you're, you know, most proud of?
Two things. I think I'm quite a stern leader. I'm very firm. I'm very demanding, which can all sound very negative. But on the flip side, due to my fairness and humane side, I to this day have staff or colleagues rather from 20 years ago looking me up and say, is there something perhaps at your new business? Can we work together again? Wow. So that makes me feel incredibly proud and happy, knowing that they enjoyed actually the tough times together because they knew about all the successes we celebrated as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that hits the core of what you were saying about helping people too, isn't it? People don't always remember what you said, but they remember how you made them feel by the sounds of it.
Yes. Yeah, very much. It's how do people feel about themselves when you leave the room? Mm. That one saying goes. That's so important. And then the other one is, I love building something from the ground up, and together with the story from Stellar that we launched in South Africa, it would be that two other companies that came from abroad as well. I did the startup for them here in Cape Town as well. So that's physically where you have just a in those days, Skype, Teams and Zoom these days, a call with the owners and the CEOs of the foreign companies. And you start getting the first little office of 40 squares. You then get the second office of 800 squares. You then get the next office of 8,000 squares. And how you know that everything there, that you answered the phones, you organized the phone lines, the internet in that first 2 months, and now you've got 200 people sitting there in this business that wouldn't have been there if you didn't take the leap of faith to build it together with the owners from overseas.
Like the modern day, like you're standing in front of an acre of, you know, one little strip of land, and you've started planting seeds and then watering those plants. And all of a sudden now you're standing in front of this giant Amazonian forest that is all started, and you know that you planted the first seed and dug with the first little shovel way back when.
And I think that actually ties back to your first question, actually, when we spoke about mentors, that when I was in 2002 at the Fushini Group with Howard Godfrey. Although he was the CEO, it was a retail store. To every single store opening at the beginning, the first 45, that we opened 45 stores in 4 years, he came with his 745 BMW and he unpacked boxes with the casual staff to ensure that the store can open on time. Mm. And there was just a sense of belonging, a shared vision, a shared energy to this will be a success, non-negotiable, because he's involved.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's together with the startup that I applied, that I didn't just delegate, I did many of the things myself. And then when the new, as we grow every month, extra 20 people, for instance, they know that what they're doing, the GM did 3 months ago.
I like it. Because that is inspiring, especially when you look at, you know, people higher up and you think, well, they're not that disconnected if they're there on the ground, seeing it, doing it, lifting it, pressing buttons. You know, clearly they do get it because they're there doing it. So, you know, yes. It helps you to feel better about what you're doing. So if you had to give three tips for people that are wanting to achieve greater levels of success in their lives, what might that look like?
Once again, going back to a previous answer, but be clear on what is your risk appetite, and be honest to yourself, truthful to yourself. If you're a low risk taker, then take low risks and you can do the best that you possibly can with that. opposite is applicable as well. And then your brand. People that work with me, should they watch this, will laugh because I bring this up weekly.
Okay.
In tough conversations where I always say, what is people's perception of your brand? Are you a Mercedes-Benz? Are you a Volkswagen Polo? Are you a Tata? It's all about when people think about you when you're not present, what are the two or one key characteristics or words that jumps to mind?
Mm.
And only you have control about that. And that, I would say, many a times influences where your life will go to, because the way people perceive you is influenced where they will place you.
Mm.
So ensure that you are aware about the people's brand perception, because the same to your remark earlier, introspection is so important, because you might think you are a BMW, yet people think of you as a Fiat.
Mm-hmm.
and the opposite is applicable as well. So it's important that you decide, what is your brand? Are you cheap and cheerful? Are you expensive and difficult? What is it?
That's an interesting one. Like, I feel like what's interesting to me is, like, you can't necessarily live your life based on what everybody else would think, but you do need to be mindful of acting in a way where you come across the way you want to come across, which probably then ties back into what you were saying before about the whole, like, introspection, self-awareness, and actually finding out who it is that you are, that your real definition of success, and trying to be in a place where that makes sense. You know, if where you really want to be is a gardener, there's probably no point being in the office, because all of the things, your brand is going to be John Deere instead of, you know, whatever an office brand is, right? So it's like they probably need to somehow get to the place where they are actually, where they can truly be themselves. And obviously you need to work on that to a degree, but if you can truly be who you are, sounds like you are, that you're hardworking and that you want to help people, that's going to shine through because that's your guiding principles. So do you feel like, yes, that whole thing, if you can align what you really are about, helps people to portray the right branding?
Yes, definitely. Because it ties in with credibility. You're not a poker face. You walk the talk. Horrible cliche, but you need to walk the talk. And you can't walk a different talk every 2 weeks.
Mm, I like it. And was there a third?
Yes, there's a third as well, actually. That's never stop learning. I'll be the first to admit I'm no good person for reading. I just find it a bit boring sometimes. Mm. Actually, the person I've mentioned before, from Melbourne, Danny Hell, introduced me to a book. I don't know whether you know it, The Great Game of Business. It's about open book management by Jack Stack. It is just a phenomenal book. It's about how much more you can accomplish with your colleagues when there's absolutely no filter and no secrets. Mm. The whole thing, OBM, open book management. And I had a certain way of management, and I actually changed it, I would say, about by 50% since reading that book.
Oh, wow.
So
changes?
Yes, definitely. Because as soon as there are fewer secrets, the less assumptions and less rumors you can have in the business.
Mm.
And of course, you can't share the payroll file. That's the only thing that needs to be kept secret.
Yeah.
But it allows the people to see the bigger picture, and they can understand what levers they can pull to grow the business. And then, of course, it's your responsibility as the leader to act on that and reward for positive levers that have been pulled, otherwise they're going to stop.
Yeah, well, that's so intriguing, because it's like, I feel like corporate isn't necessarily a place that you would say, like, if you were, you know, you're saying about branding, a lot of corporate places, you wouldn't pick honesty, even though that might be on the wall. Integrity might be on the wall. Openness and honesty isn't necessarily the ones that are at the top of the list. In fact, it's a lot of this game playing and a lot of those sorts of things. And I like to be an open book. I like to be an honest person. And I feel like a weight is lifted off my shoulders because I don't have to really remember what I've said. Because if somebody asked, someone taught me that once, I think it was like a Christian brother or something at my high school, you know, said, if you always tell the truth, you never have to remember what you've said, because when something happens, you can just go back to the moment and recall it, and what happened is what happened. So I suppose as a leader, you know, you're walking the talk, which I think some of these cliches are, they're cliches, but like they make sense. There's truth in them, right?
Yes.
And so you're walking the talk. So then everyone around you is getting to see that. You're rewarding them for it. So they're going to try and do it more often. So then that is, by rights, getting everybody rowing in the same direction, but also helping them to all shed the weight of game playing and dishonesty and hiding stuff.
No, 100% spot on. And people actually appreciate not confiding, but sharing with them that would have been perceived as sensitive or confidential information in the past. It makes them feel a sense of belonging. And that's the whole intent of that book. Because then there's a shared vision. I mean, I share the financial statements with even down to agent levels on the phone once a month. They know exactly what's going on in the income statement. And then they can understand why there needs to be done changes when something goes in the red. And then you can show them again, we implemented this change two months ago, but just look how much things are in the green now this month because of those changes.
Oh, that's nice. Because then you'd feel like it matters. Sometimes it almost on ground level, it's like, what is this? If I throw this pen, it doesn't matter. If I don't use that paper, doesn't matter. You know, does anything matter? You're almost just all turning up just for the sake of it. I really do love that. That's fantastic. Well, look, this has been an absolutely awesome chat, Hein. I've certainly enjoyed getting to know you. If other people were wanting to, I appreciate that. And if other people were wanting to follow along on your journey, is there a place where they can connect or follow or reach out?
LinkedIn, I would say, is the easiest. I've got profiles on most social media platforms, but LinkedIn, I would say, for career and work and stuff like that, and any questions, LinkedIn would be the best. So it's just my name and my surname. There are not many of this combination on LinkedIn, fortunately.
Terrific.
And there's a photo so they can recognize me.
Yes. And so, look, thank you so much for coming on. I certainly did appreciate the chat. And look, really, for anybody listening to this, thank you so much. I really appreciate that you've come along to watch another episode. I'm Tom Bell, and I'll catch you on the next episode.